evening, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and I am so pleased you're able to join us. You know, we just passed Thanksgiving, and I hope you had a great family time. But if you didn't, due to family issues resulting from a divorce, my guest and I will be sharing tips to help you make it through the upcoming Christmas and New Year holidays. For me, you know, it seems I don't see a lot of family members, you know, for years. We're all scattered across the country. But then along comes the graduation or wedding, and it always seems like everyone pops up out of the woodwork, and they've got loaded barrels to spew out at everybody. You know, the first person that talks to them, you're kind of done with it. You know, and you just get all of this baggage that they have. You know, they kind of let the gate open, and their dirty laundry from decades, it seems to rear its head. Extended families, you know, they're a sure challenge for me. And I've learned what to expect and what not to accept. Those are two totally different things, you know, from those people in my presence. Now, I really don't want you to think there's a magic key or something and all of a sudden it's like lollipops and roses. So I'm talking about four decades here. So much of my dealing with these families after a divorce is my own trial and error, and it has not been easy. I have not had any guidance. I've not had any role models or mentors to help me. It's kind of just, you know, I was winging it on my own. But I can tell you today, I'm still standing. My kids are still standing. Sun came up. We're all good. And it's a full moon tonight, so we're on a great day. Today, my guest is Rosalind Sadaka. She's a certified corporate trainer, and she is recognized as a voice of child-centered divorce. You know, that's really, really important to know. She has experience. She's been doing this a long time. And she also has her personal experience she'll be able to share with us. She's the founder of the Child Centered Divorce Network, and it provides valuable resources for parents facing divorce and moving through it and then after the divorce. So many people want to tell you, this is what you're going to do, this is what you get ready for, you have your lawyers, you sign your papers, and then after it's sort of like, you know, they say the government's going to fall off the fiscal cliff. Well, you fall off a nice little bit of a cliff yourself there, you know, and everything seems to hit you in the face. So she'll be able to talk to us a lot about that. And she's a divorce and parenting coach and author of How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce. So I'd like to welcome to the show Rosalind. Thank you so much for being with us, Rosalind.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, we say about the holidays, and isn't it so much fun when you think you hear all the stories of other people just going off into no-no land, you know, and like, oh, well, you didn't say that, right?
The holidays are definitely one of the most trying times for families that have any kind of loss or splits. It's very, very challenging, especially if you're a parent, because children so relish the holidays and they're so used to certain traditions taking place from previous years. And then when a divorce comes along at any point, especially if it's even closer to the holiday season or if it's pending after the holiday season, there's just a lot of confusion and no one knows exactly quite how to handle it all. And it's a good time to get some advice and realize you're not alone and that there are better alternatives. So take advantage of understanding the options available to you and life can be a little bit smoother.
You know, so many times people say, oh, it's just the holidays, we went through it last year and it was a big deal or it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, what parents, I think, don't really realize is that any time you're going to anticipate a divorce, so really this is a process. This is not just, oh, this year I had a divorce and blah, blah, and I'm good to go. It's the years leading up to it, then the actual occurrence, and then the years following. And I know my kids have done this, and I've heard a lot of their friends have done this. Oh, well, they always attach the incident that happened in the family to the holiday. So when the next holiday comes around, the first words out of their mouth is, don't you remember last year? You know, and you just want to go, oh, I wish I could just dislodge that memory from that holiday time. You know, anything could happen in the family, like in February or March or April or the summer, whatever. But as soon as something happens around the holiday, it's sort of like it rears its head every year.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's because holidays are about traditions. And we have memories, and a lot of families do have traditions that just go back years and years, even decades. And it's very important if a family has had any kind of a split or a break or a loss to focus on initiating some new holiday traditions. Because if you try to keep up whatever was in the past, and if the family did things a certain way, bought the tree on a certain day, had certain
right.
foods at the table, all of those can trigger unhappy memories. So it's very healthy for the parents to initiate new ways of celebrating the holidays that your children can cherish and enjoy together for the future. Maybe it's a special trip someplace that you've never been before, or celebrating with new friends and neighbors, people who you haven't always celebrated with. Maybe it's attending a special holiday event in your community that you haven't been to, or going to a different place of worship. Things that are new and different so that you're starting over with a clean slate. And you could also encourage your co-parent, your ex, your former spouse, to do the same thing when the kids are with them, so that they also have something different to look forward to and something that's new and exciting, rather than focusing on what isn't the same. Because once you go in that road of what's not the same anymore, and then you're in loss and you're in regret and you're in pain and sorrow, but you could reframe. And when you use this as an emotional starting point for bringing the focus back onto the new you and the new family and the new things you're going to be doing, then you're able to give everyone an opportunity to get excited, get involved, and rediscover new things that they may enjoy even more.
Well, you know, we kind of just really, I kind of barreled right into the topic, but, you know, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe about how you even got started in this, even talking about it? I mean, for myself,
absolutely.
You know, I've had divorce, you know, in my situation for the past, like I said, 4 decades. So for you to actually do something about it, and I'm just kind of like mellowing through it, I think that's really great because you help so many others.
Well, thank you. My story started when my son was 11 years old and I was getting a divorce. And my son was very close to both his father and to me. And I felt very guilty and concerned about doing anything that was going to break the bond he had with his father, because I knew if I tried to break that bond, I would get, it would break my relationship with my son too. He would be angry and resentful towards me, even though we were very close. So I stayed up literally for weeks and weeks of sleepless nights. I just couldn't come up with an appropriate way to break this terrible news to my son about the fact that mom and dad are not going to be living together any longer. Even though there was a lot of tension in the house, we were fighting a lot for the year before that, and he was starting to get migraine headaches as a symptom, and I knew we had to do something, and that life would actually be better if we were living in two separate houses. So I came up with this idea one night at 4 a.m. of creating a storybook in advance that I put together, and I used family photos, and I put it in a photo album, and I wrote text, and I added some key messages that every child needs to hear when they're facing divorce, and that includes, this is not your fault. It's so important that parents stress the fact that the children are in no way at fault about the divorce, even if you're
mm-hmm.
fighting about the children. The second message is you are and always will be safe. This is a very insecure time for children. Their foundation is being thrown out from under them, and you want to remind them that they are safe and are being taken care of. The third message is mom and dad will always be your mom and dad. And that's something that's very important, because it's frightening to think that if mom and dad are divorcing, they may be losing one or the other.
Right.
And the fourth is mom and dad will always love you. You need to emphasize that, because when they understand that mom and dad used to love each other when they got married and now they no longer do, well, maybe mom and dad will want to divorce me at some point. Maybe if I don't behave well, they'll divorce me. And it's very important to reinforce the fact that this is a relationship with your parents that is forever. The next message is, this is about change, not about blame. We don't encourage parents talking about the other parent and pointing the finger and explaining your dad had an affair or he's an alcoholic and that's why I'm leaving him and it's all his fault. That's not age-appropriate information for children, even for older teenagers. So you have to focus on the fact that the form of the family is changing, but we don't talk about who's to blame because we let adult information be kept among the adults. And the last message is things will work out okay. We want to reassure our children that we are responsible parents. Mom and Dad are taking care of all of the details and everything's going to be okay. This will pass and we're starting another chapter in our family's life. And so I put together a message that was age appropriate for my son at the time, explaining that there was so much tension at home and he was feeling it that Mom and Dad thought we would all be happier if we lived in two separate houses and he could be with Mom sometimes, he could be with Dad sometimes, but we'd still be a family and we'd be a happier family without the tension because Mom and Dad just are not getting along anymore but will always be his Mom and Dad. And I added the family photos and I presented it to him at the time of breaking the divorce news. And it was a very successful tool for two important reasons. One, the message was already written for me, so I had a script, and I was able to say everything I wanted to say just the way I wanted to say it because it was already written, rather than stumbling through this very difficult, painful, emotional conversation mm-hmm. and forgetting some of the things that you mean to say, but you just didn't get to say it. And the second is that he was able to hold on to that storybook about him and his parents and his family and reread it over and over again in the days and the weeks and the months that followed. So he got that message reinforced again and again. And I said to myself, this might be a great tool to share with other people who may not understand all these messages and they may not be writers and may not be as articulate as me, and I could do the work for them and create fill-in-the-blank templates. So they could customize a little of their own family history, but most of the important text was already written for them. And believe it or not, I sat on that for 15 years and did nothing. And it wasn't until after my son was a grown adult that one day I said, you know, we worked this very successfully. I co-parented well with my ex. I learned a lot. I have a lot of valuable information to share with other people. I wonder if I could write that book with the fill-in-the-blank templates. And that's what I did 8 years ago, and it just took off, and now it's selling internationally on my website, and it's called How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce? Create a storybook guide to preparing your children with love. And that's was the beginning of my work in focusing on what I now call child-centered divorce.
You know, it really does make a difference when you've actually worked through it yourself and then you're able to work out all of the kinks. In other words, it's great when people tell you something, but it really doesn't stick until you've made it your own. And, you know, I actually hate that phrase when I listen to the things on TV. Make the music your own, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, gosh, stop saying that. But then, you know, when you really think about it in this situation, you really do need to just take what people are able to give you and then transform it into your own words like you did and give it to your child, you know. Mm-hmm. So the book is perfect. And then, you know, I know I have done this in the past. You know, when the kids would say, when they couldn't read the book themselves, they'd say, read the book to me. And we would go through and read the book but change some of the words, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's perfect if you're able to do that for your child because then you can make it what you need to be for that child. And how many times have parents turned around with their, it's like sometimes you want to say, I don't believe you just said that. You know, but with kids, you can't take it back because they've got a memory like there's nobody's business. It's just the elderly that forget, you know. Kids don't forget. The elderly forget. But you're here saying it to the kids, and it's like, oh, my goodness, you know. They'll tell you where they turned over the last rock and made their last dam when they were 2 years old and they're now 30. So, you know, you really have to be careful as a parent, you know. How can you stand up and just say, I'm going to count to 10 in my head, and if 10 doesn't do it, I'll count to 20, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut. you know?
Yeah.
How hard is that to make a choice, you know, of what you're going to actually say?
Very true. And
you know,
this was a book that some families actually continued after, even after the
right.
divorce, the kids can keep it in one house or the other, and mom and dad can add photos and add it, continuing story to it so mm-hmm. that it becomes something that stays alive for them.
Because then it's their history. It's their family history in that book.
Exactly.
So they take that and then they just incorporate that in their life. It's sort of like, you know, if you've had a little kid and you've got one of those potty books, how many times do, you know, adults pull out their potty book, you know? Because it was
mm-hmm.
in their life. It was
exactly.
their life. That or Runaway Bunny, you know? Well, this book is their life. So it's not Runaway Bunny. My house is not like Runaway Bunny. My house is, this is my house, you know?
That's right.
So can you also tell us a little bit about dealing with the families? You know, extended families has always been an absolute treat for me. It did not work well at all after divorce with extended families. And to this day, they're still on their sides. So can you give us a little more insight into what or how to deal with that, too?
Well, it's very important throughout the divorce process to be empathic, to put yourself in other people's shoes, because it's such a dramatic, difficult, emotional time for us that it's easy to forget. That's why I constantly have to remind parents, you have to put yourself in your children's shoes and see the world as little Susie and little Johnny see it, as 5 or 9 or 14, and experience it from their perspective. Well, you have to do the same thing with other members of the family as well, especially grandparents. It's a very difficult thing for grandparents who are powerless to suddenly find out that one parent is eliminating access to them, and that's the end of their relationship with the grandchildren they love. If they already have a close relationship, then I really recommend bending over backwards to honor those kinds of relationships with aunts and uncles and grandparents and cousins and other relatives and people who are close to you in the family, so that the least change that happens to children, the smoother the transition is. If a family stays in the same neighborhood as we did, in the same school district, and the kids get off one school bus or they get off the same another school bus, but they're basically still in the same class, well, life is a lot easier than when you're suddenly moving to another state and changing everything about their lives. So whatever you can do to keep relationships with friends, with neighbors, with family members, with schools, it just helps ease the transition and remind children that this is another phase in our life, but it's a phase that's okay. It's good to have some changes and some shifts, and we need the support of family and friends during divorce. But don't let your family and friends become your therapists, because that doesn't make them wise just because they love you and care about you. Sometimes we get the worst advice from family and friends who mean well, but they're giving us advice that is not in the best interest of the children. And sometimes you really do need to seek out professional guidance. Go to a therapist, go to a coach, go to a divorce support group, clergy, educators. The school guidance counselors understand a lot about this. Speak out to people who are experienced and have some background in dealing with divorce when you have questions, and you're more likely to make less mistakes and do the least damage to your children. My primary concern as founder of the Child-Centered Divorce Network is catching parents as early as possible in the process before they make mistakes that are more difficult to undo, and let them know that there are some serious mistakes that create so much pain for their children that you just do not want to be guilty of doing any of those things. And if you can avoid them, your children can get by in a much smoother, easier fashion. And when they grow up, they'll thank you about that.
Well, what are some of the examples of some serious things? I mean, everybody thinks,
yes.
You know, what really is true for me or not, or that's not a big deal. Everything's not a big deal. You know how that goes. because they don't want to carry that burden on their back of the guilt. So they just think
exactly.
nothing's a big deal. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, it is a big deal.
These things that I'm going to talk about now are huge deals. They are such destructive mistakes, and parents innocently make a lot of them. They don't always intentionally do it, or they rationalize their behaviors. But you have to think about it in the long, bigger perspective. So the first mistake is fighting in front of the kids before, during, or after the divorce. Ever, if you ever fight in front of the kids, even on the phone, it harms them because children love mom and dad naturally. They're attached to both parents. And when they see both of their parents fighting, it's like a part of them is being destroyed in the process. There's emotional damage. They don't know how to stop it. They're helpless. And they feel guilty if they're asked to side one way or another. They're confused. It's very damaging for them. Keep your fights out of the presence of children, and it'll be a blessing for them. Another big mistake is asking your children to bear the weight of making decisions or choosing sides. I know it's tempting to ask, especially older children, well, who would you rather live with, or who would you rather see on Thanksgiving this year? And what happens is, even when they give you an answer, there's so much guilt connected because they know that they're hurting one side or the other, and they're being torn. It's much better to say, Mom and Dad talked about it, and this year we're doing this, and next year we're doing that, and next week we're doing this, and tell them, even if they protest, it's easier on them because they weren't responsible for creating these damaging situations.
And, you know,
so,
just to interject for a second, you said about being, even if they protest, you know, that's, I think, very important for parents, too, to say, is that, you know, if parents make the decision and the kids have a protest, that's time to be a parent. It's not time to be, you know, guilt-ridden or whatever you want to be. And because really, if you make that decision in the right frame of mind and it's the right decision and your kids protest, that they're just kids. That's just what they're going to do.
Exactly.
You know?
And you can... You can talk about it, too. You know, you could have a family dialogue and discuss things, and things can be changed. It's not like your children, you shouldn't listen to the children. It's the emotional burden of putting the guilt on them that we're trying to avoid. And it's more subtle. Parents aren't always aware of that or thinking about that. And that's what we want to focus on. And related to that is using your children as spies. This is so common. When little Johnny is at Dad's house or Mom's house and comes back to you and you start asking, and what did you do and where did you go and who did you see and what did he cook and what did they make, and all of those kinds of questions which we're dying to know what's going on in the ex's house, the children are feeling very pressured. They want to protect the other parent. Maybe curfew was 8 o'clock, and they let you stay up till 9:30, so they don't know what to say. It creates more tension and stress in their lives. So asking a few very basic questions is fine, but using the kids as spies and finding out who Dad's talking to on the phone and who Mom had lunch with and all of those kinds of things, it's just pressuring your children. And related to that, another equally damaging mistake is using your children as messengers. In many cases, when you have co-parenting and children are in one home or the other, it's so easy to say, tell Dad we're going to be, he needs to pick you up at 2 o'clock from school on Friday, and tell Mom that I can't be available to do this and that, and the children will become the ones who are sharing the message, and many of the messages, of course, are not happy messages. And then the parent is looking at the child and saying, "What do you mean she said to do this?" That's not what you want to be doing with your children. So there are wonderful systems online. For example, one is called Our Family Wizard, and there's several others that are calendar scheduling kinds of programs. Use email. Use text. You know, have things in writing. Double check it. Don't have your children be the messengers for you, because What you're not understanding is that it's emotionally burdensome for them to take on these responsibilities. These are not always happy little messages that are being conveyed. These are messages with a lot of tension behind them, and innuendo, and a sarcasm, and a lot of other things going on. And the children pick up on it, even if they don't understand it. They just pick up on it, and they feel bad. And what we want to do is keep our children from feeling bad during the divorce process.
And you know, so many times that when you say that about sending messages and stuff, like having the kids do it, usually the parent is giving it through the child because they just don't want to deal with the aggravation of dealing with the other parent. So
exactly.
That's really like deferring your energy and your issues, like you said, to the child. And
exactly. It's copping out
And
not being sensitive to the fact that for the children it can be a very difficult task, especially if mom's upset when she gets this little message. And you know, she's blowing smoke out of her ears, and suddenly there's tension at home, and the poor child didn't do anything. People just don't understand that. And one of the biggest mistakes of all is putting down, disrespecting, and demeaning, bad-mouthing, alienating the other parent from your children's lives. As much as you may hate your ex, and there's many reasons why we're justified in hating an ex, there's lots of drama, but when you put down the parent in front of their child, it actually affects them emotionally and psychologically because part of them is that other parent, and they feel that there's something wrong with them when they're hearing something's being put down about mom or dad. And so it's very, very damaging, and I mean lifelong damage can happen from that. So we don't want to use the children as pawns. We don't want to punish dad or mom by keeping the children from them. We don't want to be manipulating life in the way where the children become the innocent victims of that. And that's hard not to do. I understand it because it's natural to want to punish, and it's natural to be angry about things, and you know that the thing that you have the most power over are your children. But it creates such guilt and confusion in the kids, and very often when they're grown adults, they'll resent you for it when they have a bigger picture and understand what happened. And there's something called parental alienation, which is the extreme version of that, where the children just have no relationship with the parent. So that's something that we want to guard against. And if you need help in creating a way for the children to have access to the other parent, even if you don't want to have anything to do with them, there are ways, there are sources and resources available so that they can have that relationship. Now, if this is a destructive parent who is harmful in any way, of course, that's a different story, but that's a small percentage compared to most of the marriages, most of the divorces going on. And so we want to be very sensitive about that. And we also don't want to, here's one more that's so important. You don't want to be confiding adult details to your children in order to attract their allegiance or sympathy. And that's something else that's very tempting to do. You're dealing with issues that are very complex, adultery and addictions and financial problems and gambling and whatever is going on that are complex adult details. And when you try to explain to your children why you divorced their parent and get into that, it burdens them tremendously. And it becomes unfair to the other parent, and it becomes unfair to the children because it's keeping them from having a loving relationship. You feel guilty for loving your other parent, but you do love them. Kids naturally do. And so there's this huge psychological burden of loving someone that mom told me is a bad person. And it just creates a lot of chaos. So confide in your friends, confide in your therapists, confide in other adults. Now, when your children are young adults, if you want to take them aside in their 20s and tell them the truth and explain to them why you felt you had to do the divorce the way you did, then you're talking talking to young adults.
Right.
But if you do it, even if they're teenagers, they don't have the mental capacity to fully understand, and they're likely to take sides, and it's a no-win for them. So everything we do in the Child-Centered Divorce Network is about making parents aware, educating parents of the consequences of every decision they make. And there's a wonderful question that I think every parent should ask themselves when they're coping with any facet of divorce, and that is, do I love my children more than I hate my ex? Do I love my children more than I hate my ex? If you stop and ask yourself that question every time you're about to make an important decision, it'll keep you sober and keep you centered in making a smart decision on behalf of the children rather than one that's coming from anger and resentment and retaliation and hatred, where you're going to do something where you think you're getting back at your ex and you're not aware of the hurt for your children.
I mean, so many times after divorce, it's really, I mean, you say you have anger and all this other stuff, but really it's just because you're hurt. I mean, you feel that you've been attacked and hurt. And when you turn around and start spewing that out on everything that's walking around you, it's like slime, you know? No matter who you look at or who you talk to, if you don't get a handle on that, that can just attack everybody and everything around you, your work relationships, your extended family, your kids, everybody. And then your kids feel that spew, and then they go to school, and they don't know how to, you know, accommodate those feelings of what they just felt, and they're giving it out to other people. So it's a really bad, vicious circle to get into.
You're so right, Dr. Jeanette. That is, you hit it on the head, and that's what happens. And it happens innocently. You know, most parents don't intentionally say, I'm going to screw over my kids and in order to hurt my ex, and I don't care. They're just oblivious of the consequences of what's happening, and they're so caught in their drama, the pain. It's mainly the pain and the hurt.
Right.
And they're so caught up in it that sometimes they don't even see the hurt and pain in their own children because their own hurt is so intense. And that's why we need the objectivity of having a third party come on board to look at the family and make sure that everything is flowing smoothly. And very often the best place to get feedback is from the schools, because if the kids are acting out in school, you know that there's something going on there. And if the kids are acting out at home, you have to assume that it's a reaction because they don't know how to explain the psychological and emotional impact of what's going on to them. So some children will regress and start bedwetting, start acting like babies, start having sleeping problems or getting depressed and withdrawing into themselves. Other children will act out. They'll start getting more aggressive than ever before. They'll be bullying. They'll start picking on their siblings. They'll start having problems in school and getting into trouble. And then you look and you say, gee, I've got a troubled kid here. You know, let's punish the troubled kid. What are we doing? And we're not aware that the children don't know how to express what they're feeling, and so they express it through behavior. And whether it's indrawn behavior or outdrawn behavior, it's a symptom that something is going on that is related to the shock of the divorce, the insecurity of the divorce, the fear and the anxiety of the divorce, and all of that. But fortunately, the divorce itself doesn't have to have those outcomes. It's not divorce per se that creates all of this damage. It's the parents' approach, how they handle it. Some parents handle things better, and the children get away relatively unscathed. And other parents have much more dramatic and traumatic situations, and those children bear a much longer and more difficult burden.
You know, when I talk with parents all the time, the first words out of my mouth are exactly, I ask them, I want to know how you feel. I don't want to know what's going on. I want to know, what is your feeling today? Where is it hurting and where is it coming from? And they'll say, my gut hurts, my heart hurts, my chest hurts, you know, my head is spinning. And you think, okay, so what is it spinning from, you know? Well, mm-hmm. I'm thinking all of these things about the situation. I'm trying to think about this. I'm trying to think about that. Or my heart hurts. I feel like I've been kicked, you know, in the gut. And then we deal with those emotions first, you know, like you said, in the privacy of some other center away from your kids. But when you can get a handle on that, and you could say, okay, I really realize that it's really my heart that's hurting, and I don't need to turn around and hurt someone else's, you know, because it really, I mean, it's like take all prisoners, you know. Are you going to,
exactly,
or are you not? You know, how many people can you round up into your rodeo so that they all believe like you do, and they'll all start thinking like you do that you're okay? You know, you really need to address who you are and what's going on and what part you play in that. You know, you don't always...
You're so right.
You don't always have to have everybody in your rodeo saying, you know, hey, yeah, you're doing it right, you're doing it right. It's like, you know, if it isn't right and you're doing something that's not right, you know, you feel it's not right, then you need to go get help for that. You need to find out
and
someone else.
Yes, and you know, one very positive thing that I want to bring out is that for parents who discover that maybe they've made a mistake, maybe for the last two or
yes.
3 years they've been doing things in a certain way and they're realizing now that that's not in the best interest of their children, it's never too late to sit down to with your children and say, you know, I'm sorry. I decided this and that, and now I'm looking back, I've learned that that wasn't the best thing for me to do, and I apologize. I'm sorry. And children are so forgiving. Children are so willing to embrace you, and it's a wonderful role model when you could sit down in front of your children and say, I'm a human being, I intended to do well, but I didn't make the best decision, and now I'm going to undo that and make a better decision. Well, you're teaching your children wonderful way of approaching life, being human, being able to accept mistakes and move on with your life, and they will embrace you for it and thank you for it. So it's never, ever, ever too late to undo the damage that you've done. And no one should ever feel that, you know, that they're living with a regret. Apology is very liberating. And also liberating is forgiveness. I know people have a lot of trouble with that word and that concept, but forgiveness mm-hmm. is not about your ex. You don't forgive your ex to make them not responsible for the ways they hurt you. That's a reality that happens. What you're doing by forgiving is releasing you from the emotional connection of the pain, so you're not reliving that pain for months and years and decades following the divorce. When you forgive them, you let go of the cord between you. You cut the cord, and it says, I'm ready to move on with my life because I deserve it. I'm my own best friend, and I want to do things that are good for me. So I'm letting the past go. And that's something that's really worth working on. I know it's not easy, and it takes some time, and it takes some work, and it's something else that can be done with a coach, with a counselor, with someone who has experience. But it really is helpful and therapeutic because it clears the way for you to start on a new, fresh path. And you need to do that after divorce because people who are stuck in the past, who are always talking about their ex and always talking about the pain of their divorce, can't start dating again in healthy relationships, can't move on again in other facets of their lives, can't be happy again, and you're punishing yourself. You don't want to be punishing yourself for the rest of your life for something that happened in the past. So working on forgiveness and letting go is really a gift that you give to yourself, and it's a gift you give to your children.
I think that's so true, too, you know, because you just want to feel whole again, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you don't want to then leave your kids out there after you've damaged them and leave them just hanging out there. You really need to keep yourself going and be able to have everybody on the same train, so to speak, you know. Everybody, we're going to make it through this, you know, this is how we're going to do it. It won't be easy, you know, it definitely will not be super, super hard, but we'll just learn as we go. And so many people try to say, well, everybody else did it, it was perfect, and they didn't have any problems. Why do I have the problems, you know? And they start beating themselves up about it, and then now you've got another issue on top of everything else.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know what I wanted? We have about 15 minutes left. I really wanted to talk about two things in particular. One would be specifically around the holidays. I know I've done this. I save ornaments, and every year I buy two or three. So, of course, now, four decades later, you're unpacking those, and it's like, oh, I remember this one. Oh, I remember this one. You know how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found, this is just my tip, is that I'm the one that unpacks them. They don't unpack them. Nobody unpacks my ornaments but myself. Because then, if there's something going on in the family that year, or there's something that just isn't resonating really nice, I'll just put those other ones to the side and put the other ornaments that are generic or extra, you know, put those on, or, mm-hmm. or ones that had happy thoughts. So I think that's really important for people. But I did also notice is that I had a few friends, and they were like, okay, after the divorce, they took all of them and threw them in the garbage. And I really, you know, if you've got little kids, they remember those ornaments, and you just threw out their memories. So
that's
kind
right.
of if you can keep them like I do and just set them to the side of the box, don't bring them out. And then when they get to be older adults, they're going to be like, you know, and then you could give them to them as a gift when they get older, say, do you remember this one? You know, these. So those are like gifts of their past, bring it forward, and just kind of skip over that part, you know? And I think that really works for a lot of people.
I like that idea, and I think it's important to be able to talk to the kids about past memories and make some decisions with them about things. Should this be out, this, because this has certain memories of a good time that we all had together as a family? Should we not put this out for a few years because it may be too painful? These are family questions that can be answered, or parents can consider them and think about that. That's all part of addressing this issue with empathy first for the children. That's the most important thing, to be aware of their very fragile psyches and how are they going to feel about things, and then try to make it as smooth and easy for them in all ways. And there's also the challenge of what do you do when the children are gone? Now they're at their other parent's house, and you have alone time after the divorce, which you're not used to. That's another major challenge for people, and I have a few ideas about ways that you could stay connected to the kids even when they're not with you at home, such as making plans to see the same movie as your kids on the same day, and then you could schedule a call to discuss the movie together and share the experiences even if you're not in the same home, or create a journal of holiday activities that you did when they were away that you could later share with the kids. And you could say, well, I went to visit Aunt Jane, and we did this and that, and then we went to the mall on this day, and we saw this movie on that day, and then you could bring home some souvenirs. You could bring home movie tickets or a menu from a restaurant or a T-shirt or a postcard or something. And so there can be another experience after you get back together talking about things. And also take advantage of emails and text messages. Some parents create a text message of the day with a different theme, such as the staying warm tip of the day, or the favorite candy bar of the day, or the sledding tip of the day, and things just to stay in touch so you have that one connection that you know at 8 o'clock at night that email is going to come and the kids are going to get to read it. And don't forget, if you are alone and you want to be warding off depression because you're in a new circumstance, it's really helpful to join a toy drive or a food distribution or something where you can volunteer over the holidays, go to a hospital, do something where you could feel valued in your alone time rather than just sulking and moping around. Pamper yourself, go to a spa, do things that you couldn't do when the kids were around so that you're reframing the situation and making it special and unique for what it is. And then you'll be able to look forward to seeing the kids again in a much better perspective and saying, well, I did all these things for me, or I did something to help in the community. That was a wonderful time, and now I'll be able to share my time with the kids again.
You know, that's interesting when you say also about the texts and stuff. I know that my kids, you know, now that they're older, we've always, when they were younger, would always go out and look at the moon and the stars every night. And, you know, and then when this texting started, you know, in the past 10 years or so, you were able to text, we started to do, we would say, did you see the moon tonight? Or go see it, it's really big. Or I can't find the moon, you know, it must be raining here. You know, so we got into mm-hmm. that habit. And now they still do that, and they're in their 20s and 30s. So, you know, that's
right.
Something, yeah, something you can keep going forward, I think, you know, those little things.
Definitely. Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing. If you could carry some traditions right up into adulthood so that they
right.
still are meaningful for kids. That's what family is about. And the important thing is to remind yourself and them that we are still family and that there's new chapters in our family life, just like in a book, just like life is full of changes. You're in different grades of school every year. You can't go back and stay in the fourth grade forever. You have different sport interests that you like, different hairstyles, different clothes. And so the divorce is a transition, and it's another chapter in our life, but it doesn't have to be a bad transition. It's just different. Different is the way life is. And there will be some good, wonderful new things as a result, and there will be some regrets as a result. But we're going to get past this, and we're going to have many, many other chapters in our life as a family ahead. And sometimes we could still be a family, and mom and dad can be together for happy times, holidays or birthdays or graduations or weddings or things like that that are important. It's wonderful if you can do that. Not all families can, but when you can, it's a blessing to be able to do that and know that these are our children, and we could celebrate graduation with our children in one household or visiting together wherever we are. So there, you make your own rules, and you create whatever works for your particular family. But you're going to be a family, and you still are a family, and that's the ultimate goal, is to keep that concept together, because your mom and dad are always going to be your mom and dad, and they'll always love you, and that's the reassurance your children need.
That's so true. You know, what I also did notice, too, though, is that what about grandparents with extended? We touched on it briefly in the beginning, but let's say, I'm a kid and I'm going to go with my dad for the Christmas holidays, and he decides to traipse me over to their house with all of his family, and they're all blaming, you know, my mom. What do you do then?
Well,
you know, I mean, that is like the million-dollar token, you know.
Yeah. It isn't the child's responsibility to be untangling that mess. That's so
right.
cruel to do to a child. And obviously the divorcing parents have to keep their families at bay and remind them about etiquette and about ways of being civil around one another. And that's, again, getting back to being empathic for the children. Everyone has to be reminded about that bashing the ex is painful for the children and never happens in this household, or I won't let you see my children. So someone has to take a stand and be very clear about that, and it's good to warn people in advance beforehand so that it's very clear that no one is talking about that and that the children can enjoy their family experiences in the best possible ways. We definitely want to invite grandparents and extended family to stay as part of the family as much as possible. It's not their fault. They're not responsible for the divorce. And even if you hold them accountable in some ways, they love the children, and the children are innocent. And that's something that is good for the children. Same thing with family pets. Good for the children.
Well, let's look on the other side, though, because I know for a fact, and I've been there, the grandparents are not there for the children. The grandparents are not on the same side. And then what do you do when the child is in that house? Does the other parent go pick them up? Does the other parent, what do you do? Because what do you do?
Yeah,
you
every
know?
Family is different, and you have to decide these things in advance so that you know. That's why the more enlightened the two divorcing parents are, the more able they are to talk to their own family members and say, listen, these are the rules about what we do when little Johnny and Susie are around, and you make very clear distinctions. Families that create drama around the children are only hurting the children, and it's an ego trip to be doing things like that and blaming. It's tempting, I understand, but it's an ego trip, and it's like slapping your children in the face. Once
it's like
you realize that,
you know?
Yes. Once you realize that, you make mature, responsible decisions. We have to make decisions as parents. And another good question to ask yourself when you're facing any decision is, would I be making the same decision if we were still married as I am now divorced? Because you can be making parenting decisions. There's all kinds of discipline decisions and school decisions and vacation decisions and incidents with bullying and all kinds of things that are going to happen to children regardless. And you want to make sure you're not making a decision that's fighting your ex. And if you were still married, you would have decided differently. Don't make decisions that are coming from resentment. Make decisions in the best interest of your children, and your ex is more likely to do the same too. The more you cooperate and collaborate, the more effective you'll both be in parenting the children. And that reminds me that I have a free ebook for your listeners called Post-Divorce Parenting: Success Strategies for Getting It Right, and I'd love to give it to anyone who wants it. They can pick it up just by going to childcenteredivorce.com, and they just give me your email. It'll be delivered to you immediately, and it's filled with the kind of advice I've been talking about this throughout this program, just to reinforce for you that you have options and choices, and that when you take the high road and you make more mature decisions, you will be thankful. Your children will thank you for it when they're grown, and you will never regret it. When you make the other decisions, you may be facing regret down the line and hurt and anger from your children. So make the smart decisions from the beginning, and it's something that you'll be able to live with peacefully.
Yeah, you know, because it's really hard to go to sleep but saying, with that tape going over in your head saying, should I have said that? Should I have not have said that? Well, all the stuff he's doing, why did he do that to me? I'm going to get him tomorrow. It's like, oh, my goodness, you're wearing yourself out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah,
like,
it's like
why
living
are you
in
even...
a soap opera.
Yeah, isn't it? And it's like you just can't let that go. And it's like a dog after an old bone, you know? Eventually that bone's going to be gone, and you're just going to be that old dog. You know, you just got to know. You just got to figure this out. And there's nobody else that's going to do it for you.
Yep. That's so true. And one more question that mm-hmm. is really smart to ask yourself is, how will my children respond to the way I approach the divorce when they're grown adults? How will my children respond to the way I approach the divorce when they're grown adults? You know, when you have a 7-year-old or even a 15-year-old, it's hard to imagine that they're ever going to be 30, but they will be. And it's going to affect their relationships with other love relationships and marriage and the way they approach the opposite sex and all of those things. And you want to know that they're going to be looking at you and holding you accountable. And if you behave now, remembering that they're going to hold you accountable, you'll make fewer mistakes and have fewer regrets than if you just go off out of resentment and then have to deal with those consequences when the kids say, what the hell did you do? And why did you do that?
That is so true. It will come back to bite you. You know, it's like if you don't cut the cord is like a bungee cord, you know. It's always got some flex. They come back and get you. And you just, you know,
exactly.
You keep dragging it with you and taking it and taking it and taking it. So, Rosalind, we're at the end of the show. If you could please give us some information about how to contact you, your website, some of the books that you've done, and, you know, just a lot of the websites that you have.
Absolutely. The primary website is childcenteredivorce.com, and that's where my free ebook on post-divorce parenting is. I also have howdoitellthekids.com, howdoitellthekids.com, which is where you'll find information about my signature book about telling kids about divorce and getting parents on the same page right from the beginning. And that's there. I also have a book on dating again after divorce especially for women. And if you go to womendatingafter40.com, you can find information about that. And I have an 8 and 12 hour anger management course for co-parents that I'm very proud of, which is at onlineparentingprograms.com, and that's even valuable for court-ordered, when it's court-mandated, someone take an anger management course, you get credit for that and get the certificate. So there's lots of resources, but at childcenteddivorce.com, you'll find most of access to most everything, and I also do personal divorce and parenting coaching, one-on-one, telephone or Skype, and I do that with people around the world. And if you have an issue related anything to divorce and parenting, then I can help you find a workable solution that you can live with, that your children will thrive with, and that you'll be at peace with. I wish everyone peace after divorce.
Yes, and that is the name of the game, is just that quiet sense of that you're going to be okay, everything is stable, you know, we're not coming after you, you know, we're not going after other people, we're going to be okay. And, you know, just knowing in yourself that all will be okay is so important, and that's so elusive to a lot of people, too, but, you know, just you can find that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. I really appreciate it. And I know so many people will listen to all these tips, and hopefully they will play it for their spouse or anyone else that needs to hear it about watching your P's and Q's and just, you know, settle yourself down and not go off the deep end because, you know, you, like we said, you know, you can make a few mistakes, but you just don't really want to go over that cliff. So thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been my honor, Dr. Jeanette. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I hopefully will be able to help a few people get through the holidays. I know every year it seems to be a different story for a lot of people, you know. And one quick thing that I will always say, too, and I'm sure you'll agree, if you got through it this year, there's always next year.
Oh, I forgot to mention one thing about International Child-Centered Divorce Month. Is this coming January? We have an entire month of free gifts from divorce experts around the world. And if you go to divorcedparentsupport.com, you'll be able to get all the free gifts and find out about all the free events that are related to divorce and parenting issues. Divorcedparentsupport.com, starting January 1st.
That would be great. So if you could email that to me, I'll probably put that out on a blog post, all of these
excellent
extra books, and we'll get that out, and people will be able to reference that by going to the show page of today. You'll be able to find out more information about Rosalind and all of her specials that she has and all of her contacts. And also, if you go to outoftheboxhealthcare.com, if you look on the company resources tab or on the blog, you will also find more links there for Rosalind, and you'll also find out about the specials. So thank you so much for being with us today, and on to a peaceful holidays. Thank you.
Yes, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.